Well, good morning and welcome to everyone here with us in Kohler, and welcome to all those listening on the webcast as well. It's great to have everyone here, great to see some faces and be able to shake hands and meet in person. Today we're very pleased to be doing a fireside chat with Mike McCabe from StepStone. Mike is head of strategy, and StepStone, if anything, right now is right in the middle of, as is their business model, right in the middle of the alternative universe, and I think making some good things happen. Their recent earnings report showed some great resiliency. So Mike, it's great to have you here. Thank you. So I know you've been on the road several time zones, so we really appreciate your coming by.
Oh, you're welcome, Adam, and thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, I want to break the questions into, I want to talk about StepStone's business. I'm going to drill into a couple specific areas. And then because Mike is head of strategy, we'll talk a little bit about capital management and deployment. But I first want to hit on the theme of diversification. It was a key theme in the recent earnings call. Mike, could you speak to the importance of diversification to your business model, to your growth profile, and your ability to serve your solutions clients?
Sure, sure. Thanks, Adam. Yeah, I think diversification is probably a key competitive advantage that we have in the marketplace. And when we talk about diversification, we talk about it through four themes. I think first is diversification by geography. We saw the international markets underserved in the private markets in the very early days of our organization. And so while the U.S. market being sort of a leader and a mature market, we decided to expand in the early days in Beijing, China, Australia, Europe, the Middle East, and Latin America. So we really created a geographic footprint, you know, 12 years ago, 14 years ago, outside of the U.S. to diversify, you know, the platform into the global markets. I think the second theme of diversification relates to asset class. You know, most investors in the private markets probably started somewhere between venture capital and private equity and buyout. As the markets matured and as the asset classes grew, we saw the need for, you know, solutions in real estate, in infrastructure, and in private credit. So now we have a platform that's diversified across all four asset classes. And I think the third theme of diversification relates to the kinds of investment strategies we pursue, whether it's a fund investment, whether it's a co-investment, whether it's a secondary investment. And of course, secondaries are a topic du jour at the moment, given where we are in the cycle. But when you think about all four asset classes and those three strategies, we can create basically 12 unique or bespoke solutions for any particular investor looking into the private markets. And then the fourth area of diversification is by client type and investor type. The private markets are often categorized by some of the large, big public pension funds. Mm-hmm. The reality is StepStone has created a flexible business model that caters to the individual investor all the way up to the large sovereign wealth funds and everything in between, whether it's an endowment or a foundation, a family office, corporate pension fund, a public pension fund. We've really created this flexible and dynamic business model to cater to a variety of investor types by geography, by asset class, and by strategy.
Excellent. I think back to my school days and thinking about the permutations and combinations. So among your clients in reality, how many different products or strategies do they generally have? And what's been the trend in that area?
Sure. This has really been a key and central theme to our growth story. While we started out in private equity and systematically expanded into the other asset classes, the reason we did that was because our clients were saying to us, hey, you're doing a fantastic job for us in private equity. Could you provide us a similar kind of service or solution in real estate or in infrastructure or in private credit? Mm-hmm. And over time, we just built out these large senior veteran teams to do just that. As we sit here today, one out of every three clients does more than one thing with us across the four asset classes. And so the thesis and the investment has really played out.
Excellent. I'm You talked about the different sort of segments of clients and sizes, and I want to ask you about the importance of StepStone as a solutions provider, maybe on the middle or smaller end of that. What are you delivering for your clients, and how are their needs changing during this current period of kind of disruption?
Sure. So we've had a philosophy and a culture from the very beginning of listen first and speak second. Mm-hmm. And as our firm has grown and as the industry has matured, what we're seeing in the larger institutions is a strategic asset allocation model that has evolved to a decision that's sort of, I want to say, almost binary. How much of my portfolio do I want liquid, and how much can I afford to be illiquid? Recognizing the illiquidity of premium is where they'll find a source of alpha. Now, within that illiquidity bucket, what do I do? How do I allocate? How do I find the managers? What strategies do I pursue? And who can help me navigate all of that? And so what StepStone has done has created this sort of one-stop solution for all things illiquid for those chief investment officers of institutions looking to fill that allocation in that illiquid bucket. Rather than having four or five or six different service providers, they can go to StepStone for a holistic solution. Then there are smaller opportunistic or mid-sized investors who are saying, hey, I'm really interested in pursuing co-investments in buyout. And for that purpose, we've created specialized commingled funds. Same thing in the secondary space. We're now seeing valuations come in. The market's repricing. Certain investors might be looking to reposition their portfolios or seek liquidity. The secondary market now is becoming a very interesting place to invest. So we have a secondaries fund, and that commingled fund will cater to smaller and mid-sized individual investors. And that would go for venture capital, where we just closed the largest ever secondaries fund at $2.8 billion. We just closed our co-investment vehicle for private equity, and we're currently in the market with our secondaries fund for private equity. So the commingled funds and the managed accounts and the various solutions that we've created cater to a wide variety in a very flexible way of investors.
Interesting. So it seems like that same diversification that lets you be a one-stop shop to, you know, maybe a smaller institution that's looking to allocate to private markets also gives you, you know, a lot of, you know, kind of arrows in the quiver, you know, to be able to meet the needs of institutions that are saying, look, I want exposure right here, right now. And StepStone, almost whatever that is, StepStone is able to provide that.
That's right. And we announced in our quarterly call this past week that nearly 60% of our growth in this past quarter came from asset classes outside of private equity. Why? These are investors looking to invest in real assets that have some sort of inflation protection or some sort of hedge. And so we've seen quite a bit of demand in our infrastructure. We had a great quarter for real estate. And of course, our floating rate senior secured private credit platform is receiving an awful lot of attention given the way interest rates are moving.
Of course. No, makes total sense. You mentioned co-investments and secondaries. I mean, you talked a little bit about commingled funds versus separate accounts, but could you dive in a little bit more to the co-investments and secondaries, because I think that's a part of StepStone's business that not everyone understands as well.
Sure. So as a large primary investor and more of an extension or as a partner to general partners out there, you know, they're looking to StepStone to augment what they're doing on the deal front by bringing us in as a co-investor. Most of the co-investments we do really is in the form of co-underwriting with general partners pursuing transactions. And our clients and their clients overlap. But what's important is we're able to create a diversified portfolio for our clients in a multi-manager way across a wide range of different types of co-investments. And the same applies to the secondary space where, you know, general partners, you know, 20, 30 years ago, a secondary sale was almost, why are they selling and what does that mean for me as a general partner? And who's going to replace them? Well, that's becoming a more and more important question today. And so general partners are sensitive to why a limited partner is selling and who is that limited partner selling to. StepStone is by far the preferred and first call for that replacement limited partner in the secondary space. And that has become increasingly important. And as general partners, have been looking to the secondary market to extend or continue the duration of some of their prized assets. They're trying to figure out who is the right partner to support that continuation and who in the secondary space, you know, is it not only a reliable, but a scalable partner. And StepStone has really played a big role in the secondary market, providing capital for those continuation vehicles.
Given the current backdrop, are you seeing a shift? I mean, it sounds like the overall secondaries business is certainly growing well. Are you seeing a shift GP-led versus LP-led?
Sure. I mean, over the last 3 to 5 years in this sort of pro-cyclical expansionary period we've all enjoyed, the number of LPs looking for liquidity has certainly softened, and there's been a stable and steady source of LPs looking to just manage their portfolio, diversify, you know, switch from manager A to manager B, but it's been opportunistic. It's not been something systematic. What has emerged has been these continuation funds and these GP-led secondaries, and that has become almost more than half the market in the last 3 to 4 years. Now, come 2022, post-pandemic, interest rates are moving up, inflation is on everyone's mind, repricing is happening, denominators are shrinking. And so now investors in the LP table are saying, maybe I should either sell or reposition or pare back my portfolio. And so LP interests are now catching up to the GP-led secondaries and perhaps, going a little bit beyond. It's just a great secondary market overall between increased appetite from LPs and increased appetite from GPs.
Do you think that increases LP comfort level with getting into private assets to begin with, the idea that there's a robust secondary market out there that's available should they need it?
Very much so. Yeah. The secondary market plays an incredibly important role in the illiquid universe. How do I get liquidity? And how much of a discount will I have to eat in order to get liquid? And all of those questions are on the forefront of LPs. It's $100 billion+ a year market. Plenty of liquidity, plenty of dry powder, plenty of players. Not a lot of new players, by the way, but there are plenty of players with capital and scale. And the process is pretty straightforward these days.
Excellent. I want to take our discussion, because we've been talking about the solutions that StepStone provides and, you know, your really client-oriented role in all this, which is sounds like it's gaining traction with GPs as well as LPs, which is excellent. In terms of some of the vehicles that we've talked about and the impact on StepStone as a business, right, how does the mix of separately managed accounts versus commingled funds impact, like, the resilience is a big word these days, but the resilience of your earnings profile? Does the relative emphasis on SMAs provide a steadier growth path for StepStone?
It does. And separately managed accounts were something that we saw was an essential solution and a replacement for what were conventional fund-to-funds. And that was a one-size-fits-all model. We felt that larger scale institutional investors were looking for something a bit more customized, a bit more tailored, something that could be scalable. So what we did, we positioned this platform to do just that. And managed accounts are a very scalable, very flexible model that allows investors to pretty much go anywhere. They can help prescribe where we go, how we get there, and over what time frame. So we can provide discipline with vintage year diversification. We can provide discipline with multi-manager diversification. We can provide diversification across strategies. Or we could get specialized and target a region, a strategy, a sector. And so managed accounts are really this incredibly flexible and incredibly scalable model. I think if we look at a new data point we shared on this earnings call, we wanted to really bring to light how our clients feel about the managed account space. And we highlighted the re-up rate. And we cited 90% of our clients re-up with us. whenever a managed account reaches the end of its investment period. And when they do re-up with us, on average, they've expanded the account by about 30%. So simple math, the retention rate is over 100% when you combine the re-ups with the expansion. So it really does provide an outlook for us and for our investors, you know, enormous visibility into the growth and scalability of our platform and the resilience of our platform. Keep in mind, these are also funds of one. Right. So we are the only solution provider for that client in that account. The commingled model has been around for 20, 30 years,
right.
And it really is a more specialized strategy, whether it's a secondary or a co-investment, whether it's venture capital, whether it's private credit, could be real estate, but they're targeted. They're specialized strategies with a stated goal, a stated return at a given unit of risk, and they cater to small, mid, and large size investors. And they are a great augmentation of the managed account. And in fact, some managed accounts even allocate to our commingled products to target a specialized strategy or a niche area or something that they want to pursue on a targeted basis.
Interesting. I imagine StepStone has a significant role in advising many of them of that. Like here's a chance. I mean, they come in with an investment objective or an exposure objective, and StepStone can say, okay, this is how we can operationalize that.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Makes sense. Stepping back into kind of the backdrop, I mean, we've talked a fair bit about secondaries, and I want to ask you about VCs also, so don't let me forget that. But just in general, at this time where everyone's kind of questioning, you know, what the outlook is going to be like, how does the private assets backdrop across global regions and by asset class, you mentioned real assets and what have you. What are you seeing there? Are you seeing a shift from, you know, private equity VC, like kind of the classic private markets, to real estate and infrastructure more broadly?
So regionally speaking,
yeah.
Adam, we look to the international markets as largely underserved and underallocated. Many of them who are allocated started out in private equity and now are seeing how the illiquidity premium and the alpha can be generated in adjacent strategies such as real estate and infrastructure. And so we are seeing an accelerated demand from the international markets in real assets. In fact, our infrastructure group has been our largest and fastest growing team, you know, on the platform. So we're going to continue to expect to see real assets demand ticking up, particularly in this environment with interest rates increasing and the need for some sort of inflation protection or hedge. So regionally speaking, we're seeing the international markets allocating more and more to real assets.
It was interesting because I asked Scott on the call, you know, hey, is international, you know, kind of providing an offset for a domestic market that may not be so hot right now. And I was surprised by his answer because he said, no, you know what, Adam, it's mixed. It's mixed internationally. That's definitely a source of growth for us, but it's also mixed domestically. And there's folks getting in as well as a few either pausing or pulling back. Right.
Well, that's exactly right. I think Scott highlighted that this past quarter was one of our strongest quarters ever domestically here in the States.
Right.
That was in part because a U.S. pension fund re-upped and expanded an account with us. And it's also in part because of the Greenspring acquisition brought onto our platform thousands of new investors that are largely domiciled here in the States. And so we really do have a strong balance and mix between North American and international clients.
I think you peeked ahead of my list of questions. I got to keep this close to the vest here. I was about to ask, could you talk a little bit about the integration of Greenspring in particular, and also the demand you're seeing for venture capital and growth equity, you know, at a time where in the public markets that doesn't necessarily look so attractive?
Sure. Well, look, we are thrilled with the way the Greenspring team and the StepStone team have integrated. We had a small and very successful venture capital and growth equity team. The opportunity to merge with the leading venture capital and growth equity provider in the market by far was just exciting. And We spoke then and we speak now a very similar language, and we approach the market in a very similar way. So the integration culturally and on all metrics has gone really well. I think where we're really excited is the team had a very successful fundraise on their secondary fund. So our venture capital secondary fund closed $2.6 billion, the largest secondary fund in the history of venture capital. And if you think about where we are in the market where valuations and repricing has taken place,
perfect. Yeah,
it's perfect. We could not be more thrilled with the dry powder we have in venture capital. But by the same token, we have our direct opportunities fund, which closed on $800 million, which goes directly into venture capital companies in partnership with GPs. So a general partner may say, hey, StepStone, could you please think about leading around for this portfolio company? Or would you be interested in working with our portfolio across here, here, and here? So now we have this direct opportunities fund to lead and co-lead rounds with venture capital companies. So we have the arsenal to play both offense and defense in DC, and it couldn't come at a better time. And to address your demand question, a lot of investors, we believe, were sitting on the sidelines waiting for some sort of correction, thinking, wow, valuations are a little rich, the market's a little frothy, let the market blow off a little steam, and then maybe we'll find our entry point.
Yeah.
Well, we're hearing that conversation more and more, that this is a particularly interesting point in time to enter the venture capital and growth equity space.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, because a lot of times, you know, we as analysts and investors think in terms of, all right, well, you know, something's selling off, you know, maybe there's a, you know, some kind of fundamental problem or what have you, and it doesn't seem like as attractive a space. And what you just said, which we all know and which makes sense, is that the reverse, and that importantly, LPs and StepStone's clients are thinking in that same way of, this is an area where I do want exposure, but I'm not going to write the ticket to StepStone just yet, because I see out in the market, you know, how valuations are and a little bit frothy and what have you. And so it's interesting and exciting that they're taking this opportunity to step in.
As Howard Marks said, buy on strength, you know, sell on strength and buy on the weakness.
Exactly.
And that's what's happening.
Exactly. Just to shift gears a little bit to distribution and particular retail, right, which is everybody's big focus these days, how are you looking to build out the distribution platforms for the retail evergreen product, where the performance is just phenomenal? I don't know if I can say that, but I did. both in the U.S. and international.
Yeah. Well, we agree. The performance is phenomenal. The product that we launched with called C Prime, which is a multi-manager product. It's a one ticket that provides investors with a diversified way to get exposure to the private markets across asset classes in a multi-manager way and in a multi-strategy way. It's out of the gate sitting at a 78% net return, in part largely because we led with secondaries. We'll layer on some co-investments, and then we'll layer on some fund investments in a multi-manager way. We really felt that the individual investor, again, listening first, was looking for a diversified way to get access to the private markets in a very cost-effective way. And so we led with this really creative product and could not be more thrilled with the way it's developed in the market. From a distribution strategy standpoint, you know, we invested in a very large team a couple of years ago that these are veteran experts that have known this industry for a long time. And they said, look, the way this works is you start with the RIAs, build some track record and some, you know, some take up there, move to the IBDs, and then eventually the wirehouses. That's exactly how our playbook has been implemented, and that's pretty much how it's working out. So we're sitting on 120 RIA channels right now. We're sitting on a number of IBDs, and we had our first wirehouse come on the platform just this couple of months ago. And in fact, the last 2 months, both June and July, have been our strongest months so far in retail.
Really?
Yes. Fantastic.
Wow.
June and July numbers. Our July 1 and August 1 were our two strongest months yet.
That's excellent. I mean, given the backdrop these days, that really, I think that says a lot about the product. And, you know, unmentioned sometimes is the distribution team that you guys have assembled.
It's all about the team.
Yeah.
And the product.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay. I think at this point, since given your specific role at StepStone, you know, we'll talk a little bit about capital management. Interestingly, you know, dividend versus M&A, I mean, you know, for a long time, including probably when you did Greenspring, accretion was the easy part, right? The cash sitting there didn't, you know, didn't have a ton of return to it. But given the environment right now and the longer term objectives of StepStone, what are your plans for the dividend and for potential inorganic opportunities going forward?
Sure. No, thanks, Adam. So the dividend is very important. Investing for growth is very important. You know, we are striving every quarter to strike that balance between investing for growth and managing the dividend. Mm-hmm. So as you know, we announced a 20 cent per share dividend this quarter, in line with our previous quarter, up from 7 cents a share not long ago. So I think the message there is, you know, we will continue to revisit our dividend and we'll move it accordingly as we continue to grow. Payout ratio is in line with our peers at roughly 50% of our ANI is distributed out to our shareholders in the form of a dividend, and we'll continue to revisit that over time. But look, the history of StepStone has really been about bringing on large, senior, veteran, experienced teams with deep track records and broad networks. And we've been doing, you know, M&A activities since the very beginning with the acquisition of Citigroup Private Equity. And we've expanded into private credit through M&A. We've expanded into real estate and infrastructure. And of course, the Greenspring transaction was certainly the highlight of 2021, where we went deeper, wider, and broader into venture capital. It's something we're particularly good at. We have a great track record, and I think a lot has to do with our culture as a firm and really attracting great teams. So the integration of teams and the growth of our firm through M&A has been a particularly unique skill set of ours. But we're opportunistic, Adam. It's not something like we haven't built StepStone to be a consolidator per se. So that's not our, you know, our stated strategy. Yeah. Our stated strategy is to serve our clients. And when our clients come to us with a problem, we respond with a solution. Right. And if that means going out into the market and bringing on larger teams or acquiring or augmenting something we do through an acquisition, that is a skill set that we have in-house and we're good at doing. So we'll continue to be on the lookout for ways to augment and expand through M&A if we're not doing something already organically.
And it makes sense that, you know, you in keeping with the client-driven philosophy and listening first, you know, StepStone really lets that drive the M&A strategy, which isn't always the case.
That's right.
That's very interesting. What are you seeing right now in terms of some areas that are maybe on your watch list of, hey, clients are interested in this, StepStone's capabilities maybe are not entirely what they need. So what are you looking out for right now?
Well, we feel really good about our platform at the moment. We are at scale across all four asset classes. We're building scale in retail. We have a great data science and engineering team that's coding up some of the world-class technology out there on the front end and the back end. So we feel we are built for this environment. We're built for growth. And I think we'll just continue to drive the business organically as our first priority. And again, if we see something that opportunistically augments what we're currently doing, we'll give it a hard look. But it's not like we're saying, hey, there's this gap or there's this need that isn't currently being met that we should probably go out and try to find a solution. That's not the case at all. Rather, we're really quite thrilled with the scale of our platform across
and the breadth
and the breadth and the depth of the private markets. Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough. Stepping in apart from like what StepStone may need or want at this point in terms of M&A, just given your role, how are you seeing the environment? Is it a good hunting ground or maybe not so much?
Well, I suspect there was a playbook a year ago and a pipeline of activities out there that might take a little bit longer in this environment while you know, a lot of assets have repriced. But there is, I think, a basic reality where if we look at our asset class and our industry, we're 20 to 30 years into the private markets, and many of the entrepreneurs and founder-led companies are thinking, what does the next generation look like? And that intergenerational transfer and transition, Greenspring was a great example. It's a 20-year-old firm. So at some point, a company will look to make a transition. It's natural and it's proactive, regardless of the market backdrop.
Right.
And so we'll expect to see some really interesting opportunities as 20, 30-year-old companies are looking to solve that intergenerational transition. And we've been the safest pair of hands in the market to do just that for a long time.
Part of my own due diligence, because we've talked about appetite and opportunity for M&A in terms of just the financial and operational capacity for that. Are there, I don't want to say limitations, but are there constraints that you would think of before maybe plunging ahead with a deal?
Well, the answer is financially, we've created an incredibly flexible balance sheet. So we are a capital light business. We intend to remain a capital light business. We took it down a revolver that's quite flexible to finance in part the acquisition of Greenspring. But when I look back to the reasons why we took the company public to begin with, Adam, there are three or four things that are worth mentioning. The first is we wanted to create a currency that could retain, attract, and reward employees, but also a currency that we could use to perhaps augment our business through acquisition. So one of the reasons why going public was specifically to create that kind of currency to help drive growth going forward. The second was, of course, to create a balance sheet, that balance sheet that could help fund opportunistically various avenues for growth. So part of the reason for going public was just this, was to create that kind of currency and the financial flexibility to pursue M&A. And then I would say, operationally, we have built this team, specifically with a huge enterprise services program, a large investment team, and a very flexible management team to integrate and bring on large senior teams.
It's interesting because you talk about, capital light business model, the strength of the balance sheet, you've got capacity, you mentioned a revolver, and meanwhile, you've got that pretty big dividend out there. So, it really speaks to, and especially the dividend, I guess, speaks to the visibility and the line of sight. I mean, we talked about SMAs and re-upping and just a ratcheting higher of AUM and growth. And I guess the dividend and all these other features of StepStone really speak to that.
Look, this was the highlight of our earnings call. When you look at the durability, the visibility and the predictive power of the earnings of StepStone, I would unpack it in three or four different ways. The first is if we look at the last 12 months of our revenue, our management fee revenue, 80% of that revenue has a tenure of three or more years. Over 50% of our revenue has a tenor of seven or more years. Our management fees are paid on either committed or invested capital, not on net asset value.
Right.
So the market backdrop doesn't really affect the earnings power of the firm from a management fee standpoint. That's the first thing. The second thing is, as I mentioned, our managed accounts have this re-up rate of 90% with an expansion of 30%.
Yeah.
So the real predictive power and the financial strength of our platform is born out of those two statistics. And then layer on the fact that we're sitting on $1.3 billion of accrued carry. Roughly $650 million goes to the house. We don't know exactly when that converts into revenue, but it is a backlog of future revenue. And the combination of the predictive and durable nature of our revenue, plus the upside associated with our carried interest, it's an incredibly financially powerful business model.
It's a strong position, and it gives a certain amount of investor reassurance, I think, in an environment like this.
An environment like this, having predictable, safe, secure, and durable earnings is critical.
Absolutely. Just a question, because you talk about attracting and retaining teams, having that equity currency. One of the interesting ways that StepStone has expanded was to have teams with earnings interest and the non-controlling interest part of your income statement. What's the outlook? You know, it takes some capital, and I know that StepStone wants to be strategic in terms of where on the life cycle of the team that these transactions happen. I know you've mentioned that in the past.
Yeah.
So what's the outlook for buying in the NCI interest in some of the, it's typically non-private equity subsidiaries or teams that you have? And, you know, are there thresholds in terms of dollar size or percentage interest that that you envision for a given tranche, for a given transaction, if you will?
Sure. We love the way we've set up the model with these large senior teams. You know, as I mentioned, we grew and we expanded into these other asset classes in large part by partnering with these veteran teams. And it's really important culturally to emphasize how alignment of interest and the right incentivization structure is in place. We have an ownership culture, and making sure that that ownership culture is preserved was essential to forming these teams that are in partnership with us.
Okay.
And so they are each on their own growth trajectory. They are garnering market share and scale and success. And as they continue to grow and enjoy that success, there will be a natural point in time when they say, ah, now we want to start pursuing maybe a mode towards some sort of liquidity. And when that happens, there'll be an exchange between the downstairs equity and the upstairs equity, and that will be in part through just a natural course of growth and scale and profitability. We're certainly getting closer and closer each quarter. As you heard me say earlier and on the call, 60% of our gross AUM flows came from outside of private equity. That bodes well for the conversation that we're having right now. And so there will be a natural point where we will buy in the NCI, but it's not something we're rushing. There's no contractual obligation. Nothing's pre-wired. It will come when it comes in a very natural and a very organic way. I would say that the conversations are happening more frequently, but there's really nothing to announce or even suggest, you know, in the next couple of, you know, quarter or two.
And the folks on these teams, I imagine, have found, you know, their incentives to be appropriate and aligned as well, sounds like.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's been the key. It's, you know, it's one team. We're aligned. We're all in the same boat, rowing in the same direction. And we're giving these teams the upside to really remain entrepreneurial and excited and drive their businesses forward.
Always a consideration when you bring in outsiders who become insiders and part of the team.
Exactly.
I'm glancing at my question pad here, and I did want to ask about one other aspect of StepStone that I think is important, and it's been in the backdrop of some of our discussion here, but just in terms of data management and information systems and the way StepStone, I guess, capitalizes on the role that you have, not only with, you know, actual partners and actual investments, but with the span of potential partners and potential investments that you guys look at all the time and how you operationalize that and make it work for your clients.
Sure. Yeah, I think data and technology is the future of this industry. In the public markets, data and information is transparent. It's all out there. It's available. It's regulated. In the private markets, much less so.
Right.
Given StepStone's footprint across the globe and across the asset classes, we have two data engines. We have a data engine on the front end of the business that is capturing all of the opportunities, whether it's a fund investment, a co-investment, or a secondary investment across asset classes, across geographies. So we have this massive data engine that's gobbling up the universe of opportunities. And then that goes through an investment decisioning tool that ends up at the investment committee. And then we track everything in between the decision and the sourcing on this backbone that we started 12 years ago. We make this available to certain clients to help them navigate the markets themselves. And commercially, we either license it or we say, if they're interested in a managed account or a commingled fund and there's a value-added component that they want from StepStone, we'll provide that front-end data technology solution, which we call SPY. So we offer SPY either to augment something they're doing with us or as a standalone service. On the back end, What do we own? What's it worth?
Mm-hmm.
What are my cash flows look like in the next 3, 5, 7 years? And what we've been able to do is create a data engine on the back end once the commitments have been made to provide full transparency 24/7, 365 for our clients to understand what they own, what it's worth, what their capital call future looks like, and what the distribution future looks like, so they understand what kind of capacity they have to commit going forward.
Which is very complex in private assets.
Exactly right.
Absolutely. I see we're out of time. It's been a great discussion. I want to thank Mike McCabe, Head of Strategy from StepStone, for being with us today. I know you have some more meetings today, so investors will get a chance to see you one-on-one, but I really appreciate the discussion.
Fantastic. Thank you, Adam.
Absolutely.